Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of the discussion of the defense in that wonderful win over the Dolphins on Thursday night. Joining me again is Alec Poulianos. Alec, how you doing?
It's always good when the Ravens win.
It's a great week, isn't it? Just makes the entire week much more fun to work through this. So we talked about a lot of things in that first episode. We talked a lot about the pass rush. It kind of, and maybe because of the situation in the game, a non-adherence to a lot of risk-taking in terms of deception, I should say. They blitzed a lot less with 5+. We looked at that a little bit. We talked about the packages they played. The Ravens completely middle-fingered the Dolphins' run game in terms of not really respecting a sixth offensive lineman, not feeling like they had to have two outside linebackers on the field all the time, and making up for it in ways that are actually quite unconventional in terms of having players like Teddy Buchanan or Kyle Hamilton play an edge, effectively an edge role for a play or two here or there.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely a game full of adjustments. You know, I think we're seeing the like we mentioned in the beginning of the show, that we have a lot of adjustments that we were seeing with Orr and the personnel he has, and trying to find the best combination of plays and personnel and packages to get the most out of the fence.
All right. And the one thing I think we agree on coming out of this first episode was that there's nothing to be embarrassed about for the Ravens going down and winning a 22-point game at Miami. In fact, I think it's even too much to say this is exactly the result they had to have, that it's the minimum result. No, that's not the minimum result at all. The minimum result was a win, okay? And yeah. They got out of the game. I don't know if they got out completely healthy, but I'm not aware of what's wrong. Let's put it that way. They didn't have anybody who left the game and didn't return, with the exception they did take out Stanley towards the end of the game, and I never heard.
He said during the presser that they just want to get him off his feet.
Yeah. And means. Good. If, sure. if that's all it is, good. if it's more, bad. But
I'm sure he's laboring a bit, but you know, they'll reduce the snaps where they can, and hopefully the mini bye helps as well.
Right, he's played better these last two games, so he'd really been struggling up to that point. And certainly the previous three games he was terrible. So we're not playing. Those are kind of the options. But we always go into the second part of the show, and we talk about individuals on the game. We've talked to, you know, some in the context of other things. But Alec, as always, you're the guest. Take us to the player you'd like to discuss first.
I'm gonna want to discuss Travis Jones first. You have it in your notes, and I agree. It was one of his best games. Played well in both the run and the pass. But my biggest takeaway, honestly, is it was one of his better games without Matt Abike on his side. And it's good to see that. We need that this year from him. If he's able to find a way to make a step this year in the absence of Matt Abike, that would be a huge blessing for the team, and kind of goes back to what we were talking about last week or last episode, that you can't just fix this interior defensive line problem. The only way that it would be a player really stepping up and transcending midseason. And Travis Jones is the best candidate for it. You know, maybe Peebles does something miraculous. I don't know. Heck, maybe the practice squad guy, you know, Brian, maybe yeah. Might be that guy. We have a lot talked about here with the defensive line. I think they're trying to find answers, but luckily Travis Jones did his part this week, and I hope that that trend continues.
So they did a lot of things with Travis Jones in this game. They played him as a three tech a lot with John Jenkins at the nose. They did that a lot on early downs. But the one thing you'll see down after down in terms of pass rush chances, Travis Jones is always in there. There's no exception to that. Okay, there are a couple exceptions, but there's not much of an exception to that where they would put in, they did put in a third outside linebacker on two dime snaps, I should say, at the end of the half. And they didn't have any defensive linemen on the field, but generally speaking, Travis Jones in a pass rush situation is a defensive lineman's guaranteed to be on the field. He's absolutely, he's right there at the top of any defensive player other than maybe Hamilton that the team cannot afford to lose right now. Even Roquan Humphrey. I mean, you know, if you have to make a Sophie's Choice kind of decision between those guys, you know, Travis Jones, frankly, is completely irreplaceable right now on this defense with the lost personnel along the defensive line. Yes. I thought he did a great job of not only holding his ground versus the run, which he's always pretty good at. He sets his feet pretty well these days. cleaned up as a run defender extremely well. So there were other people who missed tackles in the backfield. He made sure they didn't end up being big deals. One of them, I think one of them was Hamilton. So Hamilton had two candidates for a missed tackle in this game. And he was right there on the other side of that with good containment to take him down. On the other one, he's one of the people who overran the play on that big reverse that we talked about. He and Urban both overran the play, went back to the other side. They gained 7 yards on a play they could have lost 9 on. That was unfortunate, but Travis Jones is generally excellent. The other thing I think I love to see is the way Travis Jones is now creating dilemmas on a weekly basis for the opponents. Does it in two major ways. The first is getting to the backfield and bifurcating it. So then he's creating it on a by-play basis to force running backs between two bad choices, between where their blocking isn't and where there maybe is a hole. I mean, just it's a, as soon as you get somebody in the backfield and split it and force the defender to go one way or the other, it's usually a good thing for the defense. He's been very good at that. And getting the initial push or even a swim move or other beat to penetrate against his opponent, particularly when he's in that three tech role and not faced with a double team, which is now happening a lot on first down. And then the other thing is the blocking assignments all start with Travis Jones on the pass blocking. And so if you double him, that means certain things about what personnel you have available otherwise. But other teams haven't necessarily done that. They've been using a center and a guard on Jenkins, say, on first down, because that's just a more convenient way or the way they know how to play it or whatever, the way they normally would play it. They don't always go after Travis Jones with a double team. And then he was very effective in this game in terms of getting some pressures when he was singled up. So definitely creating a lot of problems for opposing defensive coordinators. Mm-hmm. All right, I'll move on to the second guy. Let's go to talk about Taven Bryan, because I know he's related here.
Yeah.
Very interesting thing, but Taven Bryan played 26 snaps in this game. He's a practice squad elevation who's replacing Aeneas Peebles. So... You know, you talk about who Peebles was. I mean, Peebles was a pure situational pass rusher. Could give you a little bit on special teams. I'm not talking about that, but who he plays on defense, pure situational pass rusher, never being on there on anything but like a second and 10, third and long, and almost always be a pass when he is in there because it's an obvious passing situation. But Taven Bryan, he's played more snaps. He's played with Okoye on early downs. He was in there on a fair number of the dime snaps with Travis Jones as part of a two-man inside battery when the other alternative was to have Simpson creeping around the line of scrimmage and trying to find his gap to rush through. So they used him much more than I would have expected. And he had a really good game here. He diagnosed a screen pass, and actually his two players, I think it was him and Roquan, diagnosed the screen pass. It might have been the outside linebacker on that side. I think it was him and Roquan, though, diagnosed the screen pass, and they had all the exits blocked. And Tua, who is known for his grounded the ball somewhere near the feet of the receiver and behind the line of scrimmage. And that was the end of that play. He had one pressure he got himself. That was very late in the game. And he had another pressure that got wiped out by the DPI on Wiggins. So really a nice game, particularly in that number of snaps, and particularly for who he is. He's a former first-round draft pick, of course. You know, you've got to respect that to a certain degree, but that's been a long time ago now. That's 2018. Same draft as Lamar that it was. So great game from Taven Bryan.
It's crazy too. He didn't even record a stat in this game, I'm seeing.
Is that right?
I don't think he did. I'm looking at the game log now.
Well, there's certain reasons why that would be true. So if he's in there, I don't see his name either here.
Yeah, but I eventually found him. But yeah, no, he has no count snap, which is crazy because he was in for 40% of the snaps and had impact and all the things we just said. But yeah, no accounting stats. I was trying to find him for that reason. I was like, what's this guy's pedigree? And now that you mentioned the first round pick, I was like, oh, I vaguely remember like this happening, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, if we can make him into a reclamation project, like, cool. That sounds great. Yeah, very, very surprising to see him take on this role. You know, I remember when we drafted Peebles, we're like, oh, well, Matabike in the way. You know, he's going to have a really limited time that he can play. And then right. Matabike gets out of the way, and they're like, you're inactive. Yeah. You know, and it's like, okay, well, this experiment's clearly going very well. So Okay, but Taven Bryan now enters the game. So let's see where this continues. Frankly, I'm just disappointed about the people's situation. I liked him coming out of college. I want to see him have a chance to develop. But at the end of the day, you know, we got to play the best players, and I just hope that, you know, he's making the right choices here with the inactives, and Bryan has earned the opportunity to play. And frankly, kind of going back to our conversation from the previous show, they're playing all these games with the practice squad. I don't know how long we can keep him on the practice squad. You know, if this continues, they're going to have to make a switch. And Okoye got less snaps than him. Urban got less than that. They're not going to get rid of Urban, I don't think, but Okoye got less snaps. So it's like, are you going to subject Okoye to waivers? How will that go for you? But I think they're going to have to start making some roster moves. Like, they can't, you know, get away with this forever. So I'm very keen to see, hopefully, maybe I'm not hoping for injury, but like, maybe it'll just play itself out and be obvious, you know, what we're going to do. But right now it's muddy.
Yeah. And he's not a like 64 piece socket sack either. He's got a pretty limited set of roles he can fill. Mm-hmm. So he's a smaller guy, much like Peebles. He weighs like 291. Peebles like 282. He's bigger and longer, but that also means he's got a lighter frame than a Peebles. Yes. Peebles much thicker, more muscular. Well, I don't know about more muscular, but he's got a much thicker frame. Right. And I don't know that it's obvious exactly what they would do. It seems like in a lot of ways the guy they could cut is maybe Urban, and slip him through to a practice squad. I mean, the thing is, it'd be terrible to do that to Brent Urban, and I don't think he's. And Bryan is more value. Urban is more valuable than Bryan, clearly to me. So I don't think that would be the way they would go. But you're right. I mean, if you go through the possible permutations, if they cut Okoye, they're taking a big chance. I mean, I think someone will probably pick him up. They'd have to put him on the active roster, so they don't have the IPPP value of it. Mm-hmm. But Okoye, you know, has shown enough this year that I think somebody else maybe is interested in him, and he's got, you know, the all valuable 3 years of team control remaining.
I know. Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. But you don't want to have them cut Peebles, you know? I don't know.
No.
So anyways.
No, they won't do that.
So, all right. We're talking about the defensive line. Let's go to Urban, right? One of the best games. He sets the tone first downs, like I mentioned earlier. And that sets up the defense for success, you know? As we talked about, you've been, ever since you made that gambling analogy, I've been thinking to myself, so we're going to just like do a three form of pressure on first down, and we're just going to see what happens, you know. let's put all our money on six on the craps table or whatever, you know. I kind of find that funny and enjoy that idea. But Urban, you know, he's making big impact on first down. It has a ripple effect throughout the rest of the downs. And I also just he's so easy to root for. You know, he's a likable character. Mm-hmm. And I really did enjoy the game from Urban this game.
Yeah, it was very special. I think he had the great game on Christmas night where he had two cleanup sacks against the 49ers. This one he generated with first pressure. And he actually shared it with Travis pressure. Jones, but it was his pressure.
Yeah.
And that was pretty cool. He's the guy they need to threaten to play the edge on first down. And they can move somebody down, or they cannot. But they can. With him threatening to be on the outside shoulder of the, oftentimes the right tackle, there is at least a real threat that he'll be the guy just to be there on the edge. And if they want to put somebody else outside, then you can put somebody smaller there. Like Simpson, he can't play the edge by himself. He's too small. You can't put him in the same spot that you would Urban at 235 pounds or 232 or whatever Simpson weighs, because he's just too small. Malik Harrison, he weighed 259 last year when he was taking those edge snaps. It was almost too heavy to move back to inside linebacker at that rate. I thought that was probably the case. But Harrison, you know, provided real value for the Ravens there. They've had guys in the past who've done that with Albert McClellan and others who've been able to play at Jarrett Johnson, for that matter, on the line of scrimmage or off ball. But, Simpson just he could be the guy who comes down and jumps onto the edge in addition with Urban there, but he can't be the guy who sets up there and puts his hand in the dirt or even really stands up there. I think he's too small for that role. So the Ravens haven't tried to use him that way, and I'm not suggesting they would, but you know, just there's limitations in what personnel the Ravens have and who could actually take that role. And it's not a lot of people right now. It's really down to Brian and Urban are the two Ans. Brian and Urban are the two guys who can do it.
Yeah, and you were just talking about Simpson. We'll definitely talk about him in this part. But they're running around with a decent amount of personnel they don't seem to want to use in many ways, right. On the 53. So, yeah.
All right. So you brought up Urban, right? I should go forward from here. Yeah. Let's talk David Ajabo. Now, okay. One thing that was kind of a bigger change in this game was he got a much bigger number of roles by snaps. He got 55% of snaps. All I can say is it's about time in terms of getting to the point where you're going to fish or cut bait on Ajabo. I don't think he's doing the job, not really, but you got to figure out what you have. And he's one of only three outside linebackers you got, so you got to get the use of him that you can right now. So time to stop worrying about who he was when he was a second-round draft pick and seemed to have an unlimited ceiling here. Now it's time to worry about who he is right now. And can you find some meaningful role in which he can help this team? Does not appear to be physical enough to play the edge for me. I don't think you could install him and have him have the success that an Urban or a Brian would have playing the edge. So right now that tells you how limited the Ravens outside linebackers are, that they don't really have any outside linebacker other than Green and Van Noy that they trust to play on early downs. And they can't play every down because they're needed as pass rushers.
Yeah.
And they just don't have the right, they don't have the right mix of personnel right now. And the loss of Tavius looms bigger every week.
Brutal loss. Yeah. I agree with you. Ajabo has done not much to give you confidence. And he almost doesn't even feel like the right kind of player. Like you're saying, like, what's this team missing right now? They're missing the Tavius Robinson role, mm-hmm. which feels like an easier to find player.
It's not.
I mean, really, I would say I feel like that's easier to find than like a true pass rush specialist, which is like kind of what Ojabo was billed as, and like he's not that even, right? So then like what if you're not that, what are you? Yeah, kind of going back to the Lawson discussion. So yeah, I'm not saying it's a trivial position to fill, not by any means, but it's just like, I guess the Ravens always claim, you know, when they draft these defensive ends or outside linebackers, edge guys, oh, they're going to be great at pass rush.
The minimum is their run defense.
Yeah, the run defense is going to be great. And then we're going to figure out the pass rush, you know. And when you don't have that, you're like, what do we have here?
Yeah. Well, Tavius Robinson was well on his way to being an effective pass rusher.
Yes.
And the most important thing he gave the Ravens was versatility. And that's what you can't replace in the Tavius Robinson role. You can go out to the market and find a guy who could set the edge effectively for you. And they may even have one on the practice squad. Milikam maybe could be possibly that guy. But they can go out to the market and they can find a guy who could do that. He might be playing special teams on another team. Might be, you know, one of their bigs who's playing special teams. But and you can find a guy who can rush the passer. They just did it with Carl Lawson, and they did it inexpensively, and I think he can provide them something as a pass rusher. And you can find a guy who's big enough to kick inside. They did that when they got Jihad Ward off the scrap heap in 2019. Yeah. But what you can't, or maybe it was 18, whatever year they did it with Jihad Ward, I think it was 19. So they, you know, you can find any one of those three roles, but to find one guy who can do all three of them, good luck. Good freaking luck finding a guy that good.
Yeah. You know,
that's the problem. All right. So let's see. That was me on Ajabo, right? Started that whole diatribe.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. It did. Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about the one known defensive rookie of the month, clearly, Buchanan. He was involved in that fumble, right? That was nice. I think that was the big play for him. Clearly has won out the role over Simpson. Don't know if I love that. Like, I'm not trying to say anything negative about Buchanan. It's just like, man, like, I thought Simpson was going to give him a better run for his money. It seemed like he handed it right to him. And now we're that's what we got is Buchanan. So he has to grow up fast. That pick that was, I believe, a head scratcher in the draft this year, at least when it happened from my perspective, is now a key contributor that we are depending on. Mm-hmm. You know, hope for that he continues to grow. But you know, I feel like it's hard to talk about Buchanan without talking about Simpson, and just so limited now. They don't seem to want to trust him. I think they trust Hummel more than they trust Simpson at this point, which is
maybe.
Yeah, like I think it's really close. not great. You know, it's like Simpson just feels like a failed pick at this point, and I don't know what his future holds, which is such a huge swing from the way the conversations were going at the beginning of camp and everything that was going on with Simpson, and it's a complete backfire. I don't know what the issue is. Maybe it's between the ears and it's processing, but yeah, it's not great.
So before his 2024 season, when I think things got bad for Simpson, and they're better in 25, however you feel about him. I mean, I think he's playing better in 25 than he did in 24. But before the 24 season, all we had to go on for Simpson was his college play, which was pretty darn good. And then we had his 26 snaps or something that he played against the Steelers in the season finale against God knows who, in that game. And he'd look really good in that game. And I remember doing the show with Jason.
I remember that game. I remember that show too. It's like kind of funny. It's a core memory, man.
And I said, you know, what is more important, what he did in 26 snaps here to end the year, or his entire college career at Clemson, which bears more portent? And it's honestly, it's just a good philosophical question, because the recent information is more pertinent, generally speaking. NFL information is more pertinent, generally speaking, but it's 26 snaps versus it's a whole lot of playing time he had at Clemson. So
yeah,
you know, which one? And I remember Jason was on the side of the 26 snaps are more important.
Oh. Yep.
All right. So anyway, Buchanan, I think, he got that rookie defensive player of the month because of counting statistics, specifically tackles. And he had a bunch. I think he did have half a sack or something during the period. So he's got that. It's not like he didn't make any plays or anything. That was, I think, the play he made, the half sack, came on a ending the Ravens futility on stopping fourth downs. So they they allowed nine in a row or something. And then he stopped that for half a sack. And then,
Well, and he also almost had a sack with the intentional grounding, you know, so
that counts.
That counts,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Those are sacks as far as I'm concerned. The positive stuff, no doubt about it. But I have a hard time coming up with any rationale why he'd be good. He played 220 snaps. That the pool they're looking at for rookies who, in terms of defensive snaps, they're probably not all that many who played 220 during that 4-game period between weeks 4 and 8. Because I think that's what they based it on.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I think that's a big part of it too, Ken. I think you hit the nail on the head that he just played a lot. You know, Rokon was out for a good bit there. And I don't know how many rookies, particularly a linebacker too. Linebacker and safety are the two places you can pile up snaps, I feel corner. Like. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Outside corner. But yeah. Not traditional, not as rotational, and he did it. So,
yeah, I would have thought, it wouldn't surprise me if you go through a year and you've got Xavier Watts in the league, you have some safeties performing well in their first year. I mean, Emin Wari would be a reasonable chance.
Watts is playing super well, which man, I was playing well enough that it made me do that cursed thing of looking at the draft board and be like, could we have gone him? Or would we have to pick him? You know, because I liked him a lot in the process. And obviously when we picked Starks, I felt like he went off the board. But yeah.
Could have still had him, I believe, instead of Mike Green, too, if that was the desire.
It was over Mike Green. I think they also could have gotten him over Ratson. I'm just blanking.
Third round pick?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I know who you mean. Chris Jones.
Yeah.
Not Chris Jones. Not Chris Jones. No. Emory Jones. Emory Jones.
Yeah. I don't know why we both blanked on that, but yeah, Emory Jones as well.
Yeah. All right. So you brought up Buchanan. Let's talk about, Green. I've got a general soapboxy thing. I think his development is really being stunted by the current usage. It's much too much for him. He did pick up that phantom tripping call, which is a sweet thing. He didn't even go down in the process. The official it's one of the worst calls I've ever seen. If you ever wanted to find a call that the other team didn't get, and that's the one you should admit to, this is it right here. It's a terrible call.
Yeah, bad call.
And once in a while you get one of those in your favor, and Green happened to draw it. Drawing penalties, very important. He didn't do anything to sell it, so no problem with that. But he's been having a lot of trouble generating pressure lately, particularly as the game progresses. So against the Bears, this is a really big deal. He kept the Ravens in the game on those first two drives. He got both of the drive-ending pressures on the first two drives that forced field goals. And he got another pressure the play before it on the second drive. So he really, he did a lot on those first two drives. And the rest of the game, he drew a blank, largely, I think, because he was freaking tired as hell. He's playing so many downs. He played 80% of the snaps last week. I think he played 46 again this week. So it's a high percentage, probably 75 this time. It's too much.
Agreed. It is indeed too much. I would say, is it bad for his development? I'm not 100% sure I would agree on that. I don't disagree, right? I would say, what I'm getting at is I'm seeing development out of Green, which is good. I think I have been seeing he's more comfortable in like understanding his role and how to rush the passer while, you know, maintaining the edge and combining all these parts of the game that are necessary for a truly special edge. I think we're seeing that progress, but like you can't expect it goes back to like they have to do this in a way, quote unquote, with the personnel they have, but it's so risky long term. Like the risk of not doing it right now is probably losing games, which they can't afford either. So we're just going to do it, I guess. But yeah, the person that like they're just getting themselves in this pickle. It goes back to like the first thing we talked about is this person, like the 53 doesn't make sense right now.
Right. No, it just, they don't have enough coverage, enough versatility in the players they have to cover all the snaps they need done. Part of it is they're playing too many defensive snaps. That's part of the problem right there.
Sure.
And they've actually been lucky the last two games. They've held the opponent down in snaps reasonably. So, you know, it was 56 snaps from themselves, which sucks, but they only gave up 62 snaps in this game, which is not at least an abhorrent number. I'll tell you what that is abhorrent. They played 8 games this year. Yeah, 5-3, 8. Yeah, they played 8 games. Only one time have they topped 60 snaps in the season. That's an unbelievable figure. Unbelievable figure for a Ravens team. They've always been known for cutting down on opponent snaps and running more snaps yourself. We're in uncharted territory as far as that goes.
We are. I hope it turns.
I want to make one other point about Green.
Sure.
Before we move on here is that in terms of the development point, which you brought up, I think to look at it, you really look at a player like Terrell Suggs and how valuable it was for him to develop as an NFL pass rusher. And he was already a heck of a college pass rusher. He set the all-time record for sacks there when he's at Arizona State. But if he could have come into the NFL, just worked with Chuck Smith all year because his only job was being a situational pass rusher, I think that would have been just immensely better. Immensely okay. better. Sure. Maybe he could have played a little special teams even with it. Probably not. Just be a situational pass rusher. You know, that's exactly what the team needs, especially going forward. They knew already they were probably weren't going to be able to re-sign Owe at the beginning of the year. And now they probably know Van Noy is not coming back. You know, they're really short on options. So it was going to be Green and Tavius Robinson, a draft pick, and maybe a vet signing next year. You better make sure Green is ready to go for 2026. And I think, you know, have a year to work with Chuck Smith on exclusively pass rush moves, getting out there on the field, being a rested pass rusher when he's out there, as rested as he can be on this defense, you know, we just made a lot of difference.
Yeah, Ken, I it's hard to push back on that. And I'll end with this with Green. So frustrating that you have a big lead, game's out of hand, and like there's him and Van Noy, like somebody's playing. You know, like they can't rest these guys. Like there's no position they can get themselves in to get these guys rest at this point, other than changing the 53.
You're saying like take them out for the fourth quarter because you got a 3-touchdown lead. That kind of rest. Yeah.
Well, yeah. They don't have that. Yeah. And I feel like they did. If like you know, they had Ojabo and I guess Lawson, you know, they could in theory, like if they had a fourth person, throw that fourth person out there and just say, you know, we're ahead, do your best, you know, and that's they don't even have that option right now.
Well, I'm not a fan of putting Simpson on the edge because he can't stop the run and you can't expect him to do that. But I don't have a problem putting Simpson on the edge if that's what you're doing at the end of a football game to get it over with. If they're up 3 scores and you know, basically they want to sit Mike Green because, well, particularly if he had any kind of a minor injury or developing injury, you need to get him off the field. Then you have my sign off in blood that it's okay to put Trenton Simpson in at the edge in that situation.
Yeah. Ken's almost offering to go in. You know, he's like,
no, we can't let Green get hurt. No, take me. All right. So I think you're up here, right?
Sure. Let's talk Roquan. He's progressing. You know, I feel this keeps happening to him. You know, where the beginning of the year, the trust factor, the defense is not working well. Maybe he's out of position, whatever. And you know, this time there's an injury as well. But like he seems like he's starting to clean up. We mentioned at the top of the show the impact he's made as from a leadership perspective. Dropped the interception, boo. But you know, I hope that he continues to warm up, and maybe he's just a guy. I this is not really the time to get into it again, but like, without the preseason now, you know, it really does feel like there's this ramp up period that we're just experiencing midseason, and the team's not as sharp, and we're just like gonna have to like deal with that. You would think it'd be a problem with all other teams too, and maybe it is, but we definitely feel it as a fan base that understands what this team is capable of and things of that nature. So
let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Yeah, I hope he continues to come on. That'd be huge. Like we mentioned as well, there's a contract decision that will be made for 2026, and it has everything to do with how he ends this season. And yeah, and right now it's a push, I would say. You know, like, I don't know if we'll keep him or not, but I would say like leaning towards keep. He's a player that they base a franchise around, you know? And yeah. I don't know if they're going to be super quick to move on from that, particularly like with what other options, you know, Simpson's not developing. Yeah, sure. Buchanan, like, sure, like whatever. But yeah, it's just they would have to go, you know, to a platoon situation almost definitely at that point, which isn't, you know, awful, but has its own pros and cons as well. So yeah, definitely, man, this whole roster is going to be so shaken up next year. They ran it back this year and it was very similar, but next year it's going to be very different. And Roquan's a part of that puzzle.
Yeah, big changes. And Roquan had, you know, one of his best games of the year here. He had a really good game the last week, so it's getting hard to tell him apart. But a bunch of defensive wins, 12 more tackles, made some really big plays. The fact, I mean, let's talk about the dropped interception, which is still a PD. It's a good play just for that, for him to step into the lane and make that PD. It's bad anytime you drop a room service interception, and he had a big chance to you know, gain another turnover there. It's a shot on goal, and it's a shot he should have hit. It's almost shooting in an empty net from center ice. but he missed it in this case, and that's how it goes sometimes. So there's that. I think for Roquan, I think I'm very satisfied about his level of play. If he'd play at this level for the rest of the year, sign me up for that right now. I think he'd be all pro again, by the way, if that happened. First or second team, don't know, but I think he'd be all pro again. And I think if he brings this defense back, the accolades for him will be significant. If the Ravens come back, the defense improves again. If you're talking about who gets the credit for it, I think Roquan Smith is going to be one of the people who gets it. I think there's an enormous desire not to give the credit to Harbaugh. Whatever behind the scenes levers he's pulling to bring in new coaching, bring in new quality control, the DNP's move from last year and anything similar he might do, the fact that he brought in Pagano and he might be advising in a positive way, which I don't think we've seen evidence of, but you know, the fact that exists, the anything he might be pulling in the background to try and lobby for getting other players this year, he won't get any credit. He won't get a lot of credit for turning the defense around, even though he probably deserves some. Or probably is not going to get a lot of credit because people are tremendously resistant. They've already drawn their line of the stand or already threw up on it in these first seven games. And they've already decided that that's a Simpsons reference, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I got you.
but they're way past a point where they can accept being wrong about who Zach Orr is. Cause they've said too many times on Twitter, they'll never win with Zach Orr. I think that's a coordinator, damn it.
Yeah, sure.
To change their Twitter handle and a lot of other things.
It's such a disastrous moment for their lives, Ken.
Yes, you can tell. Everybody on Twitter cares about everything they say all the time.
It's a very high-value platform. I think going back to Smith, though, you're right. If the turnaround happens, it's going to be a credit to him. It'll be a credit to Hamilton, right? Mm-hmm. And that makes sense. And you know, I'm not too old to remember in week two, he had one of the best games of his career, you know, so he's stacking games, you know, or see Roquan stacking games here. So that's good. Let's see if he continue it. You know, in my head, $7 million is not enough to save, to lose Roquan if he's playing at this level, right?
Yeah, I agree.
Like completely, right? It could be a question about what you do in the future, sure. Like you might decide to just cut bait, but for just $7 million, I think if he continues this, he'll almost certainly be around. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes.
Question actually might be about an extension. If he were to play at an all-pro level the rest of the season, let's say, if it finishes winning all-pro, whether you really believe he's the very best linebacker in the league. By the way, this is something Voss and I have regular debates about Roquan on Friday Morning GM. I don't know if some people have probably heard it. But I don't like paying inside linebackers either. My first choice is not to pay an inside linebacker. Voss is like, it's such a central tenet that after the fact, he can't accept the fact that a player has played well or earned that contract. We just had, you know, Ray Lewis has played in this town. You have to accept it under those circumstances. In the case of, he might still be saying, oh, that last contract, that was a terrible one. They should have never extended him. As soon as Bart Scott left, we knew he was going to suck. And first of all, it wasn't true. But, you know, we should have gotten rid of him at that point. I don't know. But he didn't want to re-sign Mosley, and they didn't. So that, I'm sure, made him happy. And then they fixed the team on the fly in 2019. Didn't involve any inside linebacker money being spent. They just went in Josh Bynes, LJ Fort, that's good enough. And that worked. And now he's seen that work once, and he thinks you could do it anytime you want. And we've just seen it fail. In all the time that Roquan is missing.
Also the defense meta is changing, you know, and I don't know if you can get away with it as much in this NFL, this moment. But
paying an inside linebacker now.
I'm saying the inside linebacker play is being emphasized more in this current meta of the NFL. And I think, you know, having a solid spine and then the inside linebacker is part of that is so critical. And I think 2019 is a different time than 2025, frankly, just like how defenses are playing.
Okay. Interesting comment. I don't know if I agree with it, but we'll stick a pin in that one for a later date.
Yeah.
I guess the big point I want to make is that I look at this more like this. Charlie Vanneman did a series of two separate shows evaluating the history of the draft since the Ravens have been in the league. And basically, you will consistently find by about whatever metric you use that the three teams who've had the most success drafting during that entire 30-year period are the Ravens, the Steelers, and the Packers in some order. Okay. Mm-hmm. The Ravens are probably number one in some people's book, the Packers in another people's book, and some worlds the Steelers are as well. But those three teams really know how to do it. One of the central things of his method, which made it so brilliant, is that you can't expect the first overall draft pick to be the best player in every single draft. Occasionally, it will happen. Okay, Peyton Manning was the best player from his draft, and he was the first player drafted, and that's, you got more than you could expect out of the thing. But your basic expectation is that a number one draft pick probably might be about the 11th or 12th best player in the draft, or maybe it's a little higher than that, but you know, you are probably going to have a quarterback there. Just leverage on that. So I understand. I'm not poo-pooing that. But you can't expect it to be the best player. You can expect their draft value to not be 3,000 JJ points, but after the fact, maybe to be 1,700 JJ points. And this is the problem with expecting Roquan to be the best linebacker in the league at his price. He's close to the highest paid, and that should make him, you know, well above average. But there's a whole bunch of rookies who don't have an alternative, don't have a way to make more money than him, who can't ever compete with him salary-wise. So you're really talking, it's a different scale you've got to work with, and it's got to be more lenient in that respect. But anyway, I think Roquan right now this year is earning his salary as is, and I hope that I hope they find a way to make it work down the line. I don't know. Do you think there's any chance of an extension?
There's always a chance. I think it'd have to be some sort of discount or something. I don't know. You know, it'd be his third contract, right? So usually those are a little bit cheaper than the second ones. I don't know. We'll have to see. They like their linebackers, Ken. This regime is still around, like, for sure. I think it's in the cards.
To me, I think there's another team willing to pay Roquan Smith because of a goodwill value they'll put on his leadership that is north of the actual valuation of the company. Goodwill, by the way, you put in when you're buying a company and you have strategic value to buying them. It's an asset you create. It's always kind of nebulous that you think you're going to sell a lot more because you buy somebody else's agents, say if you buy a block of business insurance, it's that sort of thing. But there's probably some strategic value to a lot of acquisitions that generate larger companies. This in the case of Roquan, I'm saying that somebody's going to overvalue his leadership. They're probably the same thing is going to happen with Tyler Linderbaum, by the way.
Yeah.
Somebody is going to overvalue his leadership on their team. And
somebody with a rookie quarterback who doesn't have a good defense, but the rookie quarterback looks promising, is going to go sign him. We just saw this to the Commanders, right? Like, where they, who was the inside linebacker they got? I'm blanking on the name, but yeah, no, I mean, I get, we've seen this before. Yeah. I think that's a really good point that, he'll be brought in a team that has a rookie quarterback, has the money to spend. This is a great thing to spend money on. And you know, like you said, like they're not wrong. There's definitely value there to be extracted. So, cool. Yeah. I think that's a really good point. And Ken, we're running long. We got two really good safeties to talk about.
Okay. I'll go ahead. I'll start talking about Starks. Cause he had this game that is the reason he was drafted by the Ravens. No doubt about it. A lot of the highlights of Starks have interceptions that look a little bit like the interception he had on this game, backpedaling with back position, sometimes underneath as well, and making a play up high for the ball against a receiver for an interception. This was not quite the room service pick that Lowry had in the preseason. Remember that one against Dallas where the ball was just floating back there and he's all alone to catch the ball almost like a punt. This one was a contested ball and Starks went up and got it. It wasn't his only big play of the game. If you look back earlier in that game, the very first drive, they ran that 3rd-and-6 orbit play to Achan, went for only 2 yards. It got bubbled outside by Green. And, you know, he just came lasering in to arrive first for the tackle from the deep middle of the field. So that was impressive. And he had another similar play. It's at Q2 258. Similar play, 45 bubbled him right. Wow, this is a very similar play he streaked in again and tackled, I don't have who, RR3 on that play, but both those were plays that, really nice long distance get to the ball things. It's kind of thing you'd hope to see from Kyle Hamilton. You know, in terms of his range on the field and instincts, knowing where the ball's going and whatnot, he read the play. He got to the right place. It's nice to see that. I do worry that, you know, his training was very broad in college. I mean, it was never effective in coverage the way Emenwori was. And that, despite that, there's every apparent thing you would want in terms of a player who learns the game at the highest possible rate, knows how to process the game, would have tremendous instincts just naturally from how much of a student of the game he is. He's so polished in that regard that I really question how much more upside there is for him. But to see this game, now I've got new belief. Okay. Happy to get him in the, I was happy to get him in the second round, and they didn't get him in the second round. They got him, you know, as one of two guys in the first two rounds that we're happy with in terms of getting Mike Green. You know, this is a game where, you know, it moves the needle on the ceiling for Malachi Starks for me.
Good. All right. That's cool. I think, for me, it didn't move his ceiling as much as I was just pleased to see him just trust his instincts. You know, like you mentioned, we think he knows the game well. We think he's a good processor. I just felt like at the beginning of the year, he was still playing timid. He always just seemed a little late to the play and just a little, like, you know, playing more reserved. And he just seemed this game, you know, like you mentioned, when he was just running, like, beeline to hit him, the ball came and took a lot of anticipation to get there. He was running for a while, and the interception as well. Like, it just seemed like he was playing a little bit more trusting his instincts, and like the whole defense could take, I think, a cue on that, because I think, frankly, most of the stars we have, I would trust their instincts, you know, particularly in the secondary. That's kind of the reason that everyone said the secondary is so darn good. So I would want to trust their instincts and go after the ball. And yeah, I was so pleased to see it. Hopefully this continues. This is why they drafted him, like you mentioned. And, yeah, I hope that works out. Let's go. We didn't have him in there, Gilman, but the four missed tackles, the strip sack, the strip fumble, we can, kind of keep it fast, but I'm just so pleased that he enables, like, part of his value, the goodwill value of acquiring him is, yes, getting Hamilton towards the line of scrimmage. So because he exists and allows that to happen, he's an amazing player. And, you know, like, he almost him existing enough to do that is worth any missed tackles, right? Yes. Like, he has a lot going for him. But, you know, I think there's a question in the mailbag. Maybe we just want to answer it now about if the missed tackles are –
yeah, let's jump right in that. So we do appreciate the question. This is from Brett Hammonds. He says, "Hey Ken, what are your thoughts on Gilman's overall play? He made arguably the biggest play of the game, but I'm a bit concerned about the missed tackles. Does he have a history of being a poor tackler?" I looked this up, and he did actually have a fairly high missed tackle total career, but he had 9% of his career missed tackles in this game. Think about that for a second. 9% of his career missed tackles occurred in this game.
Yeah.
So it's 4 out of, I think it was 36 or something he had in his career. So anyway, he's been a guy who, you know, has had some problems. He's had a missed tackle rate that's around 15%. It's up in the 20s this year. And he needs to improve. I mean, there's no two ways about it. But that said, and I think we covered this, I don't remember if it was in the first show or the second. If you can get one turnover, and he got both ends of the turnover, meaning he got the forced fumble and the fumble recovery. And he also returned the ball down to where the offense almost couldn't trip over the opportunity and still scored. That's worth a lot. And it's probably worth more than 4 missed tackles, even though he might've cost the team, you know, 40, 45 yards on those missed tackles.
And more snaps.
And some more snaps. Yeah. Good point.
All right. What are we going to cover next?
I think I'm just about done. I Humphrey and Hamilton probably both deserve some talk, but Hamilton gets it every week, so I'm okay to leave him out this week. Humphrey, I thought, had another fantastic game. Lot of shots on goals. They targeted him a lot as a coverage player. The Ravens, by the way, did not continue with their Wiggins follows situation this week, and they just had Wiggins playing right corner pretty much. You know, Humphrey is in there on the outside at left corner for a lot of the game, and they knew where to find him, and they threw at him, I think, 9 times in the game, and he gave up about 9 yards a target, roughly. That might have been 8, but it's in that neighborhood. And that said, he had 2 PDs. One of them was a beautiful reach across the body shot, and then what he did last week and didn't get called by the officials in terms of a nice strip and self-recovery, he got it done this week as second man to the ball. So Buchanan is making that nice tackle, good wrap-up form tackle. He comes second to the ball, and this I just love this about the Ravens defense. A good punch out. Actually, I think it was a pry out, would be the way to describe it. Maybe it's more punch out. And then he recovered the ball. The ball was on the ground for a second, but he knew it was out there first, largely because he loosened it, and then he was right on it. So great pickup for Hump, and got to see him play. The return of him and Roquan has been huge for this defense.
Agreed. One like small little digression I want to make about Humphrey too is I'm not so sure if I want him to move back the nickel in any circumstance this year. So what these circumstances will look like is if somebody gets hurt in the safety combination and they don't feel like they can move Hamilton into the nickel. I don't know if I want to put Humphrey back at the nickel. He was struggling there earlier in the year, I felt like, and he seems to have much more of a place right now on the outside edge. I know he does bring value in the physicality he brings, but I think the matchups he was getting, he lacks like the twitchiness at his age now to like, I think he's a little bit more of a liability in coverage there and he can't use the boundary as much. So I don't know. I'm a little hesitant to make him that move, but you know, it might be one of those things like you're just darned if you do, darned if you don't, like they don't have the personnel otherwise. So it might still be the best move.
If your situation were to occur and they had an injury at safety, either one, either Starks or Alohi goes down and they have to move Hamilton back or Hamilton moves down. And then God forbid, you know, they probably have to, if Hamilton goes down, I think they probably have to use Humphrey at slot. I don't think there's, unless Ardarius Washington is back or there's some other situation like that, but how about moving Humphrey back to safety? I mean, then that'd be a possibility. It's coming at some point, but
that's a really good call out. Yeah. I feel like that wouldn't happen midseason, but if anyone's going to be able to pull it off, it'd be Instagram Marlo, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the plays he's made on the football these last 2 weeks and the plays he made all last year in terms of coming off man to make plays on the ball, they're so impressive and they're so portable in terms of those instincts to the safety position. I know there's a lot more to playing that position than just being a cornerback who can come off and take the ball away from somebody else's man, or being a hard hitter who wants to pry the football loose a lot. Mm-hmm. But those are two pretty important things. Now, Humphrey's a pretty good tackler, and to have him back there, I think is gonna be the way his career probably ends at some point, and quite possibly, honestly, for another team. But if it was here in Baltimore and this was a way to make a deep playoff run in 25, I'd be excited about it.
Sure. Yeah. I that's a good point too. I don't know if he'll be able to realize it here, particularly with Hamilton and Starks. So we'll see.
Yep. Good point. All right. A couple more mailbag questions and we'll talk some MVPs from this game. Angelove85 says, with Kyle playing more at the line of scrimmage, do you believe this is sustainable? I worry about injury risk, especially if bigger offensive linemen scheme to take him out of the game. Also, how has Ajabo looked, and should we cut him if we acquire a defensive lineman in a trade? That's really two very separate questions. Let's start with the Hamilton and the injury risk question. I think it is a legitimate one, but what do you think about it?
Yeah, no, it's absolutely a risk, and it kind of goes back to my point earlier, if they can even afford to entertain not taking the risk at this point, if they're trying to salvage the year. Might be a question of team building in the future if we want to have to be forced into this role. I would say in aggregate, it's probably not sustainable, but it will be sustainable until it isn't. And I think,
it's sustainable out of necessity for now.
Yeah. I think they're going to act like it's sustainable unless they have a hard stop. They're going to act like it's sustainable at this point is my recollection, but I don't think in the fullness of time, it's sustainable.
All right, got one more that's kind of related to these two questions. Will Saunders says, besides allowing Hamilton to move closer to the line, what coverages have Gilman unlocked? Has Gilman, I guess, unlocked since his arrival? And no, half, right? Okay. And what is the coverage most used in leverage situations by the Ravens? Okay, so talk about two different things: are coverage and packages. The Ravens, it's very down and distance dependent whether they play man or zone. Okay, and that would be true of any team in the NFL. Like these man zone decisions, mostly they don't come down to anything else but down and distance as the primary consideration. And no team plays much more than about 30% man. And they play it. When do they play it? Well, they play it on 3rd and 5, 3rd and 4, 3rd and 3. But when you have to play man. Yeah, so it shouldn't be surprising, you know what's going on. And there are a bunch of like combinations of man and zone that are out there in terms of exotic ways to play defense. And then there's your more pure zone schemes like cover three, They're out there at Tampa too, that you have very specific ways in which you set your zones. But I would say the same thing that probably Alec did a moment ago, is that the most important thing Gilman has given is the ability to have Hamilton move close to the line of scrimmage. And Hamilton is the animal who opens up a wide variety of things, not just in coverage, but in terms of how he rushes the passer. Yeah. And you accept a lesser coverage asset for a better pass rush asset.
And I'm going to actually just throw out one last point about the previous question too, about sustainability. Mm-hmm. Ravens have two players that people don't think are sustainable, right? There's still a lot of people who think Lamar is not sustainable in his mm-hmm. running style. And now they have Kyle Hamilton playing this star role and, you know, also not sustainable. And I think I can understand an argument to say that Lamar is not sustainable, but he's like the smartest person to keep himself healthy. And the way that he gets himself hurt has not been, I don't think, because of his running. So I do think, you know, it's sustainable. So like I think these two players are working to make it, to prove people wrong about sustainability, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I you know, hopefully that'll be true of Hamilton. We didn't answer Angelo's question about Ajabo. You did actually allude to this. I don't remember if it was in the first show or the second, about the possibility of Ajabo getting cut.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I could get it. I think the question might be like a little bit wrong in my perspective. Like, I don't think we're acquiring a defensive lineman and then cutting Ojabo, but I do think, yeah, we could acquire an outside linebacker and cut Ojabo. I mean, if we cut Ojabo, then we have two. You know, like Cam comes up, I guess we have a third. I don't know. Like, it's a pretty dire situation at edge.
To me, the player who makes Ojabo expendable maybe is two players. It's really Carl Lawson coming in, proving he's got a little bit of juice left as an edge rusher. And that's not 100% by any stretch. Lawson is a guy who's not played a lot of consecutive times, but he had five sacks last year. So, you know, maybe not too much pass rush productivity last year, not a really high level, much lower than several of the Ravens guys, including Owe, who everybody just desperately needed to have gone. that you know, they traded away their best pass rusher. That's what the Ravens did. To get Elohi Gilman, so they better have gotten something for that. But the guy who, if they acquired an early down run stuffer at edge, I could see Ajabo going at that point, because you'd really want to transfer both those snaps and that activation to the new player. So you need both things, because you really want to have four outside linebackers again, to have Carl Lawson and this new guy who can play the edge on early downs. And then you can afford to be without Ajabo, who's now, you know, he played 55% of the snaps this last week. So that his snaps are getting hard to replace.
Yep.
All right. Let's talk MVPs for this game. And we always do a 3-2-1 methodology. Tell us, who's your number three guy?
Brett Urban. We talked about him having a great game. And it was so pleasant to see him get that sack that he like truly earned. You know, it was cool. Yeah. I love when, it was cool watching him play so well. It was great.
All right. No, he's a very likable character, and great to see him producing and doing so well. It's a great choice, by the way, too. I thought he played extremely well. I had Roquan Smith as my number three guy. I think what he's done the last couple of weeks has been outstanding. He's making tackles all over, and they're high-value tackles. He's keeping most pass plays in front of him. Reducing yak, not as well as he did last week. Last week was ungodly, but this week was very good. I feel like I could have put him first or second on this list as well, and had some other honorable mentions I could have thought of. But it was a high value defensive effort from several players. Roquan is one of them.
Yeah, I regret immensely not having my list at this point, but we'll move on. I definitely. He contributed a lot of getting the defense off the field, which is mm-hmm. is so valuable. I had Jones number two, mm-hmm. and kind of back to one of his best games without Matabike and how irreplaceable he is on this team. He stepped up and he's doing his part. So he was number two for me.
Yeah, he's number two for me also. He did it all in terms of doing against the pass, doing against the run, and it was really an easy choice of him over Roquan to me. And it didn't have anything to do with the dropped interception, although. That would have been an additional value in Roquan's column. Sure. I thought Travis Jones was just terrific in this game in terms of stuffing the backfield. My dog's starting to bark. We got to get this thing going quickly. He's your number one guy.
Me too, actually. Starks. I had Starks, and the rationale for this is I think if he continues to play at the level he is, that is what can take this defense over the top. We need we need turnovers, we need those kind of plays, pass deflections and things of that nature. Get that variance, get the defense off the field. And Starks, I think Jones is a good player and has some more ceiling maybe, but Starks is the one that really can keep climbing, and he's starting to show some signs of it. So he was my number one.
Yeah, mine too. Outstanding game from Starks. And I would echo some of the things you're saying, is that I've done this with the MVPs in recent weeks too, is that if this player can turn it around, it has that much more future value for the Ravens. It's not really fair for an individual game to give out the credit for that way, but Starks pretty much deserves it anyway for his accomplishments in this game. He had terrific game of individual events, but I'm with you entirely. He's one of the few like significant ceiling elevation for the remainder of the year possibilities for the Ravens. You know, you might look, it's always going to be a young player who's in that category, by the way. You it's never going to be a 37-year-old guy. Brent Urban, as much as I love him, he doesn't have a very high ceiling in terms of how much better he can get. So it's a Travis Jones, it's a Starks, it's a Green. It's not anybody else who you would think of who suddenly could pick up the team and carry him on his back as a young player. And Starks really, he delivered in this game and really makes the draft pick look a lot better, which is you know, nice from that perspective too. But he's my number one also.
Awesome.
All right, Alec, great discussion with you. Really appreciate you spending a couple hours with me here on a school night, so to speak, for you.
It's Friday. It's fine.
there you go. But tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
You can find me on my blog, Pulianis.com, alec.pulianis.com on Blue Sky, and apulianis on Twitter.
All right. Great. And Alec's Discord for the Ravens is still out there, too, if you want to try and talk some football with his friends out there. It's generally worth it. I don't know how to use Discord well enough, by the way. Going to need to get some training from you in terms of all the work. You know, all the notifications. It's just too hard. I don't know. Did they mention me, or is this just a new thread that's been here since the last time? I don't know what it is. So we'll I have to figure out how to.
Yeah, I can do that for you, Ken. We got you.
I appreciate it. By the way, you know, when I talk about showing an old guy how to, you know, download or play the podcast directly from the website, this is what I'm talking about right here. Yeah. Is this kind of knowledge that
Ken just like looking, he's like, how many more Kens can watch my show?
it's a target audience, you know,
and collecting the Kens.
I'm an acquired taste here. All right, other folks out there, thanks so much for listening. I really appreciate it as always. Hit me up with your ideas. Make use of hashtag film study mailbag when you can. We want your questions. We really go over each one. A lot of similarity in the questions here, but they were all worthy and had a good angle on something different. And I respect the hell out of you as an audience. And that's why I don't generally shortchange you in terms of the building blocks that we've had from many years of listening to this show in terms of what I expect. So I'm very happy that you guys do that. And whenever I meet one of you in person, that happens fairly often, you never surprise me in terms of just how much you remember and want to slap me in the face like a wet fish with. And I couldn't be happier about that. So thanks, folks. Alec, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.